Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Julius Baer's Moving Markets podcast. It's Thursday, the 18th of April, and my name is Helen Freer. So a packed agenda for you on today's show. I'll be speaking first of all this morning to Mike Rauber about all the latest market news. Carsten Menke is also on the show today, and I'll be asking him about the sanctions imposed on Russian metals and what this means more broadly for industrial metals. And Tim Gagey joins us today as well, a day earlier than usual this week, to give us all the latest news in the world of currencies. But we will start, as always, with the market news, and that is with Mike. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Helen.
So the S&P 500 fell 0.6% yesterday, failing to draw on any support from declining yields after there was strong demand for a $13 billion sale of 20-year Treasury bonds. And repeating the pattern we saw on Monday and Tuesday, shares weren't able to hang on to early gains. Can you tell us a bit more, Mike, about the market action yesterday?
Certainly. So there was some hope that stocks could keep their gains from the morning session, especially after almost 60% of the S&P 500 shares reached a one-month low earlier this week, the most since the regional bank crisis in March 2023. But it was really weakness in technology and in particular semiconductor stocks that drove the main indices lower. The NASDAQ fell 1.2% and the Philadelphia Semiconductor Index dropped over 3%. Now, this was on the back of the European semiconductor stock ASML dropping over 6%. It reported weak Q1 order intakes. And you know, Helen, this also weighed on the Eurostoxx 50 index, as the stock is Europe's largest by market cap, and it makes up nearly 10% of this benchmark. Although the mood for semiconductor stocks should be a little bit better today, bellwether Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing just came out with results reporting its first profit growth in a year and income beating estimates. So this should be good news.
Okay, staying with good news, LVMH, Adidas and United Airlines all saw their stocks do well yesterday after better than expected results.
Yes, so LVMH rose nearly 3% as results were better than feared. Adidas jumped 9% on better earnings. And United Airlines gained over 17%, its biggest daily rise since 2020. And in a way, it shows that despite all the interest rate concerns and geopolitics, companies with good results see strong positive price moves, reflecting the constructive stance investors continue to have on the market. Now, today, we have more companies reporting, of course. The Swiss company ABB is already out. It's beating estimates. And later on, we have L'Oreal and Netflix, to name just two companies.
Okay, let's turn to the UK now, where we got inflation figures yesterday, and they showed a higher than expected rise in prices in March. The figure came in at 3.2%. This was below the 3.4% that we had in the prior month, though. What else can you tell us here, Mike?
Yeah, so the figures showed some slowing in inflation, which contrasts with the US numbers. Bank of England Governor Bailey noted that this divergence between the US economy and the economies in Europe, hinting actually that a rate cut in the UK might be possible before the Fed's first rate cut, but also that the Bank of England will need more evidence that inflation is cooling before cutting rates. And you know, in that sense, the Bank of England, just like the US Federal Reserve, are very much data dependent, meaning they are led wherever the latest inflation numbers takes them. Now, this, of course, does not make it easier for investors, but it also means that there's a lot of focus on these inflation data releases at the moment.
Okay, stocks in Asia this morning are mostly in the green. What's the story there?
So there's a pushback from authorities against a stronger dollar, and this has restored a sense of confidence, at least for today. Now, this is really on the back of weakness in a lot of emerging market currencies and in particular also across Asia. Now, U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, alongside the finance ministers of Japan and South Korea, they came out with a statement noting serious concerns about the depreciation of the two Asian currencies. And separately, the People's Bank of China also warned against exchange rate overshooting.
And there's plenty of action in Washington, D.C. Congress is back in action in terms of various matters. What are the details here, Mike?
Yes, so the social media app TikTok is heading to its moment of truth, some say, with Congress on track to approve a bill that would force ByteDance, or the owner of TikTok, to divest the social media platform. The measure is set to be included in the aid package for Ukraine and Israel that's now due for a vote on Saturday. And this should also include new sanctions on Iran's oil industry. Now, President Biden has endorsed the plan and said he signed it into law immediately.
And staying with oil, it dropped 3% yesterday, with Brent just above $87 a barrel. And Goldman Sachs came out with a report noting that there's probably $5 to $10 in geopolitical risk premium in the price already.
Yes, absolutely. So it seems the market turned to fundamentals yesterday by focusing on ample U.S. crude stockpiles. They rose by 2.7 million barrels last week, more than expected, and they are at their highest since last June. Now, interestingly, this happens as the investment firm also reported that hedge funds have sold U.S. energy stocks and are using the money to buy call options on oil as a geopolitical hedge. In fact, the volume of bullish bets just surged past the record set in 2019. And just to add, the U.S. has also reimposed oil sanctions on Venezuela, ending a six-month reprieve, saying its president failed to honor an agreement for fairer elections.
Just finally, in relation to a couple of stories, we saw some really eye-popping numbers in the press yesterday. Can you tell us about these, Mike?
Absolutely. So for one, Tesla will ask shareholders to vote again on the same $56 billion compensation package from 2018 for the CEO Elon Musk that was voided by a Delaware court earlier this year. And Saudi Arabia's NEOM is planning a riyal bond sale for later this year as it looks for more sources of funding for the $1.5 trillion worth of construction project it's planned for its futuristic city in the desert. Of course, there's a lot more to these stories, but still think the numbers in itself are eye-popping, as you said. And lastly, not eye-popping, but reassuring, European equity futures are mostly in the green this Thursday morning. Maybe comments by Christine Lagarde overnight that Europe's economy is nearing the end of its malaise is helping markets.
Very good. Thanks very much, Mike, for the nice roundup this morning.
Thank you, Helen.
Now, Carsten, welcome to the podcast. Good morning, firstly.
Hello, Helen. Good morning.
So, with all the focus being on the Middle East, some might have missed the news about the sanctions that were placed on Russian industrial metals by the UK and the US late last week. Could you please give us a few of the details here, Carsten?
Sure, Helen. So, the sanctioning of Russian origin industrial metals is a long debated move that was always seen as a risk for the industrial metal markets. Going forward, it will not be possible anymore to deliver Russian aluminium, nickel, and copper into the warehouses of two of the world's most important industrial metal exchanges, the London Metal Exchange, LME, and the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, COMEX. And the goal, of course, of these sanctions is to further cut financing from the Russian economy.
How big is the impact on the markets, considering that Russia is an important producer of all of these metals?
Indeed, Russia is a big producer, but the impact on the metal supply and demand balance will very likely be limited, very limited indeed. This is because the majority of metal is directly traded between miners and manufacturers, with only a residual ending up in the exchange warehouses. As a result, an early and steep increase in metal prices petered out over the course of Monday's trading session. At the end of the day, prices were up only between 0.2 and 5% after rising as much as 8 to 10%. That said, the sanctions could cause a more differentiated pricing in the international metal markets. Non-Russian metal is likely to trade at a premium over Russian metal, similar to what we observe already in the oil market.
So essentially then, you're saying that these metals will be traded out of reach of the sanctions?
Yes, that is how it's most likely going to shape up. The fact of the matter is that there are willing traders outside of the influence of the Western world who are happily making a bargain buying and selling Russian metal. This is already illustrated by the fact that China's imports of Russian aluminium increased almost threefold compared to the pre-war times, with the prices being paid around 6% lower than for other countries. Further factoring in that aluminium is not a supply-constrained market as there is ample idled capacity that is waiting to be restarted if economics or prices are right, we would be surprised to see any lasting impact from the sanctions. And the same basically also applies to nickel, for which strong Indonesian supply growth during the past few years pushed the market into oversupply.
And what about copper?
Copper is a different story as the market is heading into a structural deficit based on our estimates during the next few years. This reflects sound demand growth from the energy transition and slowing supply growth due to previous underinvestment.
Very good. Thanks very much, Carsten. Good to hear your thoughts on this.
Thanks, Helen. Have a good day.
Thank you. Now, let's move over to you, Tim. Good morning.
Good morning, Helen. How are you doing?
I'm well, thank you. And you?
Good, thank you.
Shall we start then with the yen? As we saw new highs in the dollar yen this week, how much of this is due to a strong dollar?
Well, it's true that the dollar has done quite well lately, but actually the most recent short-term dollar move was some mild weakness. We can see this with euro dollar back to almost 107. So that actually means that euro yen is also back to almost its highest level of the year. So no, I think this is really still a yen move. Apparently this 155 level in dollar yen is something of a line in the sand for the Japanese Ministry of Finance. So there is a lot of talk about intervention. I still really struggle to see this happening in any meaningful way. I mean, maybe they come in, buy some yen to stem the tide, but like any tide, it's very hard to change the direction of it. So I would expect any impact from the Japanese authorities to be temporary. The yen will only come back when there are good reasons to buy it and to hold it. I just don't see any for now. The yield differential is so brutal. And inflation is hardly flying. Okay, fine, it's higher than what we are used to, but still seems a little fragile. So I still think that staying away from the yen is the smart move. If you're long yen, then yes, of course, do watch out for an intervention, but maybe only to help you to reduce your position, because I would not count on intervention to turn this tanker around.
So are we still sitting in the ranges?
Yeah, we still are. Admittedly, we have flirted with the outer edges of some of the crosses. I mean, euro dollar, for example, went all the way down to 106. But here we are again, basically just below 107. I imagine we will drift gradually back above it. This week, we felt it was interesting to sell a few dollars here and there. We got some quite nice aggressive levels in accumulators, in euro dollar and in cable yesterday. In euro dollar, I still think anywhere below 105, if you can get it as a conversion level, is great through a reverse convertible or an accumulator. And in cable would be something like 122. I mean, as near as to 120 really you can get, but that's probably a bit unrealistic. I'm still a big fan of the New Zealand dollar. Interest rate differential here with the dollar, with the US dollar, is basically flat, but we are really at the lower end of the last 12 months at 0.59. We saw 0.58 back in October, but I think if you can get into Kiwi somewhere around here, maybe sell a put or look at a reverse convertible, it's a great entry level. Aussie dollar is probably also not bad, but the yield is less interesting, and I would really prefer the Kiwi. And actually, if you wanted something a little bit more unusual, I think selling Australian dollars versus New Zealand dollars is quite interesting, or selling a call on the Aussie against the Kiwi, because 110 in that cross is a big resistance. And from the current level, just below 109, I think I would expect it to move back to something like 107.50.
And we've also seen some sort of a recovery in the Swiss franc recently. Any change to your view there?
No, no change to my view. I think in the context of the geopolitical concerns, it's reasonable to see the Swiss franc come back a bit, especially from where it was. Maybe dollar Swiss is getting a bit high here. That's more of a dollar view there. I just think perhaps it's come a little far. But so maybe even with the amazing carry, dollar Swiss is a bit doubtful. I think I'd be tempted to take some profit on long dollar Swiss, but I would not be long Swiss francs here or short dollar Swiss, because the carry is just too painful. If I look at euro Swiss and sterling Swiss, my favorite pair, I hold the line, because we are still well within the ranges. And actually, if anything, this latest pullback is an opportunity for those who have not done anything yet, rather than any cause for concern for those who have. I also like the idea of being long Kiwi against Swiss franc. The chart here is just really very, very sideways. It's a bit like the story we saw in sterling Swiss last year. We held perfectly on the 200-day moving average at 0.5350. And with a positive rate differential of 4% per year, of course, I think this is a really nice opportunity right here. Thank you very much, Helen. Always a pleasure. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and I wish you a great day ahead.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Tim. Right, so that's all for today. Thank you again to my guests this morning, and thank you all for tuning in. If you enjoyed today's show and you haven't yet subscribed, then don't forget to do so. And please also leave us a review on whichever platform you like to listen on. And do join us again tomorrow when I'll be joined, among others, by our head of technical analysis, Menzel Pachinci, for a special on the old adage, sell in May and go away. So do tune in for that and see what Menzel has to say about whether this applies this year. Have a great day, everyone, and bye for now.
The information and opinions expressed in this podcast constitute marketing material and are not the result of independent financial or investment research. Please refer to www.juliasbear.com/legal/podcasts for further other important legal information.
Beyond Markets is a weekly podcast where Julius Baer experts and external speakers discuss some of the latest market developments. They share their key research and insights on today's ever-changing economic landscape and present practical advice. Search for Beyond Markets on your favorite podcast player.